Welcome to Take the Red Pill,
where we explore the realities within our reality.
We are your hosts, David Deere
and Donald Dalton.
For our episode for today, we are going to kind of take a little bit of an exploration. We're going to start talking about the evolution of humanity, not like we did in nonlinear creation theory, but more just kind of a focus on where we've come from as humanity, our own genesis. A lot of it kind of focused in a spiritual direction. And then we're going to see where this topic takes us. So we're going to just kind of let it kind of take its own path wherever it wants to go. So Donald, why don't you go ahead and throw the breadcrumbs on the path to start?
Ah, breadcrumbs. I love them, as long as you don't eat them or have somebody behind you eating them as you're going along.
Yeah, so, off the ground.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, hey, we need those to get back to where we started from. If we're starting from the beginning, it's kind of difficult because we have the stories of Atlantis and these ancient civilizations that seemed like they were here before us, and then we have the whole idea of that we've talked about in previous episodes, where, you know, the genesis of Homo sapien as we know now may have been tweaked a little by extraterrestrials. Where it comes in with spirituality, though, I see it's more of a kind of a general evolution where, you know, we started off with just the basic needs of I need to eat, okay, I need to procreate, okay. There wasn't a lot of what we'd consider now of spirituality, but there was a mysticism there of, hey, the stars in the sky, we may not even have names for the stars, but, you know, we have the thinking of something bigger than ourselves, something, you know, more encompassing than just our little cave by our fire and what we do. And I think that kind of started the spirituality part of, let's make sense of this. And, you know, being spiritual nature, it's just like, well, it's very subjective to whoever is observing it or thinking about it. So okay, that's kind of my take.
What? Oh, I thought we were, when I misunderstood when we were talking about spiritual, the spiritual aspect of the origin of man. I didn't realize we were talking about the origins of the spirituality of humanity.
Oh, okay. What were you thinking?
I thought we were talking about the origins of humanity, but more on a spiritual kind of out there idea.
Oh, okay. See, this is one of those interesting places where we have a general topic before we started to hit the record button. We have an idea of what we think we know the other person is talking about.
Right, exactly.
Which is completely opposite from the nonlinear creation theory
episode. Yeah, it sure is.
Where we're like, do you really know about that? Yeah. Oh, we were totally on the same, pretty much on the same page. So
Yeah.
So give me your take on that.
I was looking at more from an aspect of the genesis, the origin of humanity. This is a little bit nonlinear creation theory, but not necessarily. I'm thinking of it more just kind of where did humanity come from? There's the ideas of the missing link. There's the idea, which we talked about in, I don't remember which episode it was, but it might have been aliens and UFOs, right? That we talked about extraterrestrials manipulating the DNA of human beings. Yeah, we did. And you have a strong belief that that was the case, correct?
Yes. And I still have that belief.
You still have that belief that we were manipulated. Now, what do you base that on?
The story, the way that it's said, it's kind of like a creation story. My brain is trying to give like factual evidence, but this is more of kind of a belief evidence. And so it's very difficult to give a factual evidence. So it's kind of like, for me, I believe it because it makes total sense. I can see that, you know, hey, we could have evolved and moved on and become the who we are now without alien interaction. At the same time, it seems like when my brain tries to grasp how many millions and millions and millions of years the Earth was here and had life on it, and then all of a sudden, man, you know, walked foot on the earth for the first time, and it's just like, huh. And then the more I've heard over the years where, you know, people are trying to find the missing link, like you said, it's like, well, we're not really Neanderthals, so we don't really think we came from there, but we don't know where Homo sapiens came from. And so we don't really know where this evolution split thing came from. And so I'm like, oh, I have an idea. So to me, it's a current belief to fill in a hole of a missing theory of evolution at the moment until something else comes out.
And I'm good with that. So I'm gonna play with this concept a little bit,
Okay.
the one that you have there. That concept there is kind of a linear progression of the evolution of humanity, right? That you hit at a certain point. So my question to you is, do you, and I'm not gonna go too crazy referring to this, but refer a little bit to the time episode here, which we like to do. Do you think that time is a fact set in stone, or do you think time is a perception based on human perceptions?
Kind of like, is there a universal clockwork that is the way it is, regardless of what we believe or perceive? Or is it more of, hey, we perceive time a certain way and therefore that's the way it is? Is that what you're
Right.
asking?
Is the perception of time, linear time, inherently human, or is it inherently belong to the universe or some dynamics or physics of the universe?
Oh.
Now, and this is tying to this. So, I mean, I'm not getting too tangential. I'm going somewhere with this.
Okay. Yeah. If you'd asked me a few years ago, I would have said time is linear, it's just the way it is, and we attribute different aspects to different parts of time that we can think back to and imagine.
Okay.
But at the moment, through our conversations, you've given me a lot of stuff to think about through our podcasting, and I thank you for that, and it's definitely helped me to grow a little bit. So right now I'm kind of thinking, you know, what if right now, as they say, is all we have, it's just this moment. And so that seems like it would preclude a little bit more of a linear history, but at the same time, I can still think back to when I was a child, and I can think back to memories that I had growing up and memories of the past, and I can project ideas of what I may want to experience into the future. So I can also see time being linear.
Put those memories in order if you can. Can you?
Yes, I can.
Based on what?
Based on what we as.
No, what? No, let me. I'm
Okay.
sorry. I'm going to clarify my request.
Oh, thank you.
Remember those memories in order.
Oh.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah,
Now
because.
do that as, and I'm going to invite you to do that for a year straight. That every time you create a new memory, it. You can only recall it after you've recalled a memory that happened of an event that happened before that one. And you cannot
Oh.
recall any memory that followed that one until you've recalled that memory. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, see, my brain doesn't work that way. I don't think a lot of people's brains work that way because I naturally go to the memories that have the most intensity, the most weight.
And but a memory is not connected linearly. I was listening to a podcast, the podcast that the Animal Totems podcast episode. And I was listening to that. I was thinking back on those times that I was seeing tortoise. I didn't think of the first time I saw it and the second time and the third time I saw it. I was just thinking of different times. And it was out of order. When we remember things, they're threaded and connected by some kind of significance that might be emotional or that might have some thread, but we rarely ever think in things in order of when they happened unless there's some compelling reason to do so.
Doesn't the clockwork of linear time exist even w and we just perceive linear time to our own memories? Or.
Pretty much, I think so. I mean, like I always say, if you close your eyes and you think of a past and the event, then you close your eyes and you make up a possibility of what could happen in the future. Really, when it comes down to brass tacks, how do you tell the two apart? without referring to, well, I remember because it's this happened and I was wearing this and so was standing next to me. You could do the same thing with a future event that hasn't happened yet.
Exactly.
You can imagine somebody standing next to you. You can imagine what something smells like. You can imagine what colors were in the air and what season it was.
And with Photoshop, you can make it a reality, or at least a visual reality.
You're Photoshopping your memories. You know what?
Future
it's
memories.
Kind of, I'm sure there's a story in there somewhere, that some science fiction. Oh, yeah, actually, it's kind of Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind is kind of like that, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I wasn't thrilled with that movie when I saw it.
Okay.
But that was years ago.
Wasn't Charlie Kaufman?
Oh, the movie or the writer?
Yeah, the writer.
Oh, I don't know. I know that Drew Carey was in it. Jim Carrey, sorry.
Jim Carrey, yeah. A different Carrey. well, there. The only reason I refer to that is because memories and imaginations and things like that, I don't think we can tell them apart unless we put a frame of reference to them. The only thing that seems completely tangible to us is what's right in front of us right now, and the rest of it is just kind of almost like vapor. You know what I'm saying? It's fleeting at the grasp. So what I'm saying, and the reason I took this road is because I want to look at human evolution in the same regard.
Okay.
Human evolution, we often say, well, you know, then it was 1492, and then it was 1321, and then it was the turn of the millennium, and all this stuff. When we don't really, when we're like, okay, if time is just a human concept, but yet it's really doesn't have any tangibility except for a point of reference that we only give meaning to, then wouldn't our own human evolution be the same way? Wouldn't, in other words, the further, in my theory, the further back you go, you don't go the further back in time. You go the further back in cognizance. You go further back, you get further and further away from our tangible perception of three dimensions and time and who we are.
Kind of like if you're staring at a light and you're slowly moving back from it, you can still see it, but you believe that it's there even when it gets to a point where it's just, you know, smaller than a star, and then all of a sudden it disappears because you can no longer see it. You still hold on to a belief that it's still there because you know nothing different?
Exactly.
Ah, yeah. Gotcha. Yeah. Okay.
So now take that. Take what I've just thrown toward you, and what would you say about that or do about that if you looked at human evolution in that context?
Oh boy, that's a good one. I had never actually thought of it from that perspective before. I actually have no idea where to go with that.
Okay.
Because I don't even know where to start.
Well, here's the thing. I think it's kind of like a picture coming into focus is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's like imagine, you know, in the movies when they wake up from going unconscious and all they see is just this big blur around them.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden everything starts to get a little bit more detail. I think human consciousness is similar. I do. I think physical reality slowly but surely started to coming into focus. And the more we brought it into focus, the more tangible reality became. That's my belief of the genesis of human consciousness.
So at some point in that focusing of reality, there was a thought or idea of there's something bigger than us out there, and that was kind of the beginning of spirituality. Or is that kind of where you're going, or am I totally lost?
I would say that it was before. Okay, let's take something pretty common like Genesis.
Okay,
for those who kind of follow a Judeo-Christian line of thought. Give it as much credence as you want. Just make it as disposable as you want. But the idea was you had this God that said, let there be light, and there was light. And all of a sudden, God created all these things, planets and animals and all that other stuff, and then created a human, and then created a human from soil and blew breath into human. Anytime we try to do a creation myth or a creation story, we bastardize it, we distort it, and we pollute it. Because we try to say, all right, let's use a human perception as we know it currently to describe something that is outside of human perception. Mm-hmm. We always give, like, the Big Bang Theory results because we give things a beginning and an end, because we can't perceive of nothing without a beginning and an end. But if you look at human consciousness, I think human consciousness started almost more dreamlike. And I mentioned this, I don't remember where, but, and you know, in a dream, how you find yourself in another place all of a sudden.
Oh, yeah.
And you didn't necessarily travel there. In our past, the past, as far as I'm talking about, you did go from one point to the other because you were not as tangibly physical reality focused.
You know what this sounds like to me? Expressing it in a different way would be like spirit becoming more and more dense into this three-dimensional reality, and that would allow for what I understand you're talking about, where like in dreams you're able to jump from one point to another point, and as you know, spirit became more and more dense, it jumped around in thought and belief until it actually settled into three-dimensional density.
Exactly.
Okay, so that's definitely what you're talking about.
Exactly. Yes, that
so what does that mean for, you know, the whole idea of spirituality, or the whole idea of thought other beyond that of, you know, what we perceive other animals on this planet to have?
I think that material, that matter itself is just the best way I can think to describe it is, have you ever stood at a beach and then you watch the water roll in and there's some rocks and kind of the shoreline is a little bit misshapen, and then the water goes out and you see these little kind of whirlpools and eddies?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that matter kind of whirlpools and eddies by vibrations. So when you get these similar vibrations, they start to coalesce together and they form these richly, beautifully complex things such as plants and animals and human beings and all these other things.
So you're saying we did not know of other solar systems until we built the Hubble telescope and started looking for them?
Well, and here's the other thing about solar systems. Now, solar systems, to me, as far as I'm concerned, and we talked about what I thought was the shape of the solar system in that weird episode that we did. You remember? I'm going to call that our other lab episode, where I talked about the shape of the galaxy and all that other stuff. The thing is, I don't think that galaxies really have and stars have any distance. I think they're just, it's a vibrational and dimensional frequency, but it appears to us very far away because it's just, all things reside in one place. They do. And the distance between things is all perceptive. And it's perceptive based on our perception of physical reality. As far as that goes, there are energy, there's creative energy that's creating things all the time. And when we realized that we're just creative things, consciousness started to play around. But when consciousness wanted to get a little bit more detached from this spiritual realm and knowing that all things were part of all things, I think that's when we went into the human experiment. And the human experiment was, let's just forget that we're part of consciousness and all that is, and create kind of a perceived separation of things. The easiest way to do that was to seemingly entomb our consciousness into a physical body.
Oh, and so it'd be like spirituality would be almost kind of like an after image on our consciousness of where we used to be and how we used to be.
Well, how we are, but just forgotten.
Yeah, well, I'm talking about before the human experiment at all. You know, it's just like, hey, you know, energy, yes, thought. Oh, thought manifests. And then all of a sudden, density. And then we hit this density and we feel the separation from spirit to a large degree, but our consciousness and our soul, we still have this imprint of this afterthought of, hey, remember what it was like before we came down into this three-dimensional density, before there was humans?
And I know what you're saying, and you're absolutely right to a degree, but the before implies time again, linear time.
Oh, yeah.
If you ask me, here's how it really works. There's a moment that just passed for you and me,
mm-hmm.
and now we're in another moment currently, and there's about to be another moment that we're going to hit. In between all those moments, we are way out of our physical bodies, and we're in that total spiritual state. And we're perceiving things without time, without any physical boundaries and physical lockdowns. And then we come right back. So each in between each moment is that spiritual timelessness, that spiritual essence of no time, where there is no before. And it's constantly. So when you said before we became conscious of being human, well, that's constantly happening. I do believe that our consciousness is constantly slipping back into the human realm, but it happens so gradually and so deceptively that we can't keep track of it.
Hmm.
So to us, it just seems like a moment that's just all strung together continuously without end.
Yeah, well, that gives a lot of, you know, credibility to the whole idea of spiritual beings having a physical experience, but, you know, we're also physical beings having a spiritual experience. And it sounds like you're kind of going along those lines to a degree. This is where it's kind of like, it's very difficult to for me to wrap my head around the whole idea of you're slipping in and out of perceiving third dimensional reality and being connected to spirit. And the thoughts that I have with that is just like, well, is that through all of human history of the whole species? And if it is, then why do we have a linear, you know, a linear way of, you know, past and present and a future?
Why do we have past and present and future?
Why aren't we able to get to a point where we see all this stuff happening at once? Or where's the spirituality where we're able to say, okay, we have this concept, we have this idea, we have this belief, where we could possibly see the whole of human existence in the blink of an eye?
I think it has something to do with the fact that we deny the fact that we are inviolate in consciousness.
Hmm.
I think it's because we don't fully, truly, 100% accept the fact that we are and will always be. And we are, and there is just that the consciousness, and even if you want to say the soul, is eternal.
Mm-hmm.
Because we constantly see things beginning and end rather than just changing aspects. See, if something's changing aspects, we say it's because it began and then it ended again, rather than seeing it just a fluid shape changing of it from one thing to another, but yet its essence is still constantly going. Like, let me say this. If you take an atom, and an atom goes through so many different incarnations, an atom can be part of a tree, it can be part of a piece of wood, it can be part of something you eat, it can be part of your body, it can be part of the earth, it can be part of the ground, it can be part of water.
Mm-hmm.
But it's that same atom, as far as we are concerned on a scientific level, that has just changed shape. And we say that matter can't really be destroyed, it can just really just change into energy. So if that's the case, then everything kind of is immortal and kind of keeps on going on forever and ever and ever. But we just can't accept that. And because we can't accept that, then we are trapped into seeing things in a line.
So maybe the spirituality that we have, the beginning of the whole spiritual thought of the human race began from our future, or even our present and future beliefs in spirituality and higher power?
Sure, that's what I think. You say you have trouble with that, though.
I can see, because I think this is kind of where I'm having difficulty wrapping my head around the way that you're explaining it, because that's very foreign to me. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I can kind of grasp onto this whole idea of, you know, souls and our spirits are eternal, and also consciousness, I believe, is eternal. And if we take out the idea of linear time, kind of make time into a bubble, then everything is happening at the same time. Okay, everything's happening at the same moment. Let me rephrase that. Mm-hmm. And therefore, whatever spirituality we have or will have starts to bleed through to other times that we're able to perceive linearly as our past.
Mm-hmm. And that's how my dinosaur theory works, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Give a quick recap of that.
My idea of the dinosaur theory is once we accepted that we were in tangible physical reality, the moment we accepted that, and the moment we accepted that we were going to work with the physical realm in the way that we do, now, of course, we're surrounded by cars and stuff like that, what that did was brought into reality the timeline of the dinosaur's existence.
Mm, exactly.
We manifested that by accepting this particular reality.
Yeah, that is the whole episode of nonlinear creation, I'm sure, because that's how I've seen it for a long time, even before you and I started talking, or even before we met.
Right, exactly.
You know, it's like, well, you know, reality has to shape itself to our belief system. So if we finally get to a point where it's like, hey, we have a history, we have a past, we have a present, and we'll most likely have a future. Well, what was there before us?
Mm-hmm.
There was probably, oh, look, a bone, a big bone. Oh, a big bone goes to a big animal. Let's have some researchers look at it. It looks like a lizard bone. Big lizard. Ooh, okay. And then all of a sudden the consciousness and the thought of that, you know, goes out through our linear past and creates this whole history of dinosaurs so that they can have their existence and die, and then we can find their bones and say, see, we have a past. We have evolution.
Yeah, you'd made that exact same sample in the linear creation theory, and I thought it was spot on when you said it. You, like you said in that episode, you said we found a bone, and we said, all right, let's give the bone a body, and let's give the body a life, and let's give the life a whole set of species and stuff like that.
Yeah, and I kind of look at it from a linear point of view, where if we go into our history, what if our spirituality happened, you know, we were fully in three-dimensional density. We looked up and said, stars, oh, they're not always here. They seem kind of immense. Well, if they're out there and we can perceive them, then there must be something bigger than ourselves. That's where I kind of start getting a little lost, because it's like, okay, we have, that could be a start of our spirituality that has, you know, goes through our cell memory and DNA and everything, generation after generation after generation. But I also see that it's kind of evolved from primitive mysticism to where it is now. And I understand that in the future, what we perceive as spirituality could be considered primitive mysticism.
Mm-hmm.
And what we currently perceive as primitive mysticism will be considered like ancient mysticism.
Yeah.
So, and that's one thing that took me a long time to really grasp for a while, because I was sitting there and I was thinking, where did the thought of a higher power begin in the human consciousness? I mean, it's definitely there. It goes through all cultures, all tribes, everywhere. That's one of the little ideas that kind of gives credence to my belief in the human species being manipulated a little bit by extraterrestrials, is because you go to a tribe where they have this belief in a higher power, and then all of a sudden, you know, this thing comes out of the air, and it's just like, oh, wow. Hey, they took Johnny. Johnny comes back. That's not Johnny. He looks a little different. No, really, I am Johnny.
Well, what about the extraterrestrials then? Then they must have come to their sentience somehow. Were they manipulated and engineered as well?
Well, this goes back on the idea of, you know, the theory of evolution, where if you believe that they were evolved, or they evolved on some distant planet or whatever, then they could have evolved then and then come here. But at the same time, they could have evolved here on Earth and then decided to, like the Atlanteans, reach a certain consciousness and then decided to play around with, you know, creation and 3D reality and belief systems for a little while, and like, hey, we're Atlanteans, and there's a animal over here that looks kind of interesting, kind of like we would say, we're humans. Oh, look, there's a rat. Let's go see what we can play with a rat and see if we can give it, like, or a sheep. You know, back in the 90s, it's like, hey, let's give this sheep a third ear, see what happens. And,
you know, I just kind of came up with something as you're talking.
Okay.
A lot of the ideas of the manipulation of the alien manipulation theory says that the aliens came down and they wanted gold for their atmosphere, and they had genetically engineered our predecessors to be able to do their labor to mine this gold, correct?
Yeah.
And eventually something went awry and they really couldn't control us, or we just, that kind of took an evolutionary step. What if, stay with me on this.
Okay. I'm with you, David.
What if that in and of itself as well is just kind of as distorted as maybe a biblical story might have been?
Hmm.
What if that is all analogy as well?
It could be.
What if we're talking about these aliens or entities or other things are just from a different dimension or vibration, and we're working in a way that uplifted our consciousness, or not uplifted our consciousness, but focused our consciousness, giving us more focus into being able to perceive ourselves as third-dimensional physical creatures of matter. And gold, you know, I'm going to do a little bit of research, and I want to see what the atomic structures of gold are all about. It might not tell me much. That gold is an analogy to the workings of sacred geometry.
Oh.
That when sacred geometry starts to get perceived in these, remember those little whirlpools, those eddies I was talking about?
Yeah.
That when you take energy and you let them take these eddies using sacred geometry, you start creating these patterns that allow perception of what is physical, a perception and manipulation of matter.
Hmm. It sounds like that's dipping into the whole idea of sacred geometry, where there are these geometries that you can find in every living thing and every, to some degree. It's like, if I remember correctly, I think it's the Flower of Life. You can look at that and you can actually see how the eyeball of a human being works, mm-hmm. just in the geometry of the Flower of Life.
Right.
And you can find, I mean, you can find the Fibonacci sequence in flowers and shells and all this other stuff. I mean, all over the place.
Ooh, I want to talk about the eyeball for a second.
Okay.
Now, with the eyeball, how do we know this? We think that our perception in our brain of visual images is because light is hitting our retina. How do we know that it's not our retina that is projecting the visual images out to create the reality around us?
Oh. In other words, not taking in, but a pushing out.
Exactly.
Our brain basically saying, I only see what I believe that I can see.
Yeah.
So it's like, I only can see rainbows. And you open your eyes and it's just like, that's all you see is rainbows.
Well, I would say this. I would say we project out that image into the future and then we encounter it.
Hmm. And that would go right in with the whole law of attraction idea.
Exactly. Yeah, that would go in with the law of attraction idea.
Is what you see is what you, or what you believe, what you perceive is what you, what you perceive is what you believe.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
I think it's something more of what you perceive is what you conceive is what you perceive. In other words, you have to see it before you can believe it.
Okay, that makes sense to me.
Or you have to think it. Yeah, it has to have a.
But think about the word see. I see what you mean. We use see all the time in a non-visual context. We use it more in a believing and perception and understanding, you know?
We also use the word hear. We don't normally go around saying, I smell what you mean.
Right. Yeah, which is kind of interesting. Dogs probably would be doing that because their reality is formed about, you know, huge percentage smell.
Oh yeah, and they probably wouldn't be so focused on, you know, see. And so if dogs were walking around at the level where they had developed language to the level we have, and they were able to communicate with us verbally, it's like, you'd be talking to a dog, and I could just see that would be very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Is it a deal? I'll smell it to the bone, take it to the bone or something like that.
Well, then again, the analogy is that deal really stinks.
Yeah.
Think about it. You know, our belief systems are based on, you know, we have all this lexicon that's based on our perceptions, but not necessarily reflective of the actual perception. But, and with the sacred geometry, my other thing that I've been tossing around with the whole pyramids thing, the pyramid is just this big chunk of sacred geometry. Here's my belief. I haven't found any source that can really validate it. I found things that kind of hinted to this, but this is my words and my perception and my belief, is that the pyramids are designed to anchor us and our planet and our perception in physical reality.
Oh.
They're physical manifestations of matter, anchors on
plane. The plug on a bathtub so the water doesn't go out so you can take a bath?
Kind of, sort of, but I would think of it more as a resonator.
Hmm. Ooh. Then the whole idea of the harp is a bad idea.
What do you mean? Are you talking about the harp project?
Yeah. Wouldn't that be a resonation of basically breaking down a little bit of our ability to perceive things the way we have so far.
Well, go with that. I don't understand. Make the connection for me.
Okay, the HAARP, the HAARP project, and
HAARP, right?
Yeah, HAARP, and I can't remember exactly what that acronym stands for, but it has to do with working with high frequencies to manipulate natural occurrences. And people have thought about that it could change weather patterns, it can affect tectonic plates. There's ideas that when they turn the HAARP on, especially near an ocean, whales and dolphins have a really hard time because it travels through water so much quicker than air. It's almost like deafening to them. So the whole idea of what you were talking about, where like the pyramids are a reality anchor, or a 3D reality anchor, would that be correct?
I like that. I like
okay.
it.
Okay, so if the pyramids are a 3D reality anchor, then the HAARP would be more of a laser precision way to disrupt that anchor. In other words, once the HAARP is active, and wherever it's active, it's able to distort 3D reality as we've known it thus far. You know, it would disrupt the frequency of what you had talked about, where the pyramids are maintaining our perception of this 3D reality as we've known it thus far.
Yeah, I think that's a loose way of putting it. I don't think we can really describe it very well from our perspectives, but I think that's a pretty good, I think that gets pretty close.
Okay, so would that mean that places like Machu Picchu and other pyramids around the world, or these holy sites, or even Stonehenge, places like that, were also regulators of 3D reality?
I think they are a focusing tool. I think they've been focusing tools.
Mm-hmm.
I think when you talk about when did we become spiritual?
Mm-hmm.
I think we became spiritual. Part of it was when we realized that we were really the creators of our reality. Once we started forgetting, again, starting from semantics of time. I like to paint myself in a corner too. You know? when we talk about the perceptions of, when we talk about the, oh my goodness, I painted myself in such a corner that I can't even remember where the other side of the paint was.
Yeah, I was saying.
Help me out.
Yeah, basically that the spiritual sites such as Machu Picchu and Stonehenge, what are those? Are they similar to the pyramids?
Right. And the idea is I think that when you asked, when did we really start to kind of take in this whole idea of spirituality? I think we started looking at things like that when we saw spirituality as outside of ourselves. When we forgot that we are creating our own reality, when we thought that reality was created and we're just kind of dropped into it, that's when we started gaining a spiritual perception.
Okay, so my linear brain is thinking about this whole idea of the pyramids being a three-dimensional reality anchor.
Mm-hmm.
And if that is true, then before we were fully immersed in this three-dimensional reality, where we were kind of half spirit, half physical, would that be, in your perception, a way or a time when the pyramid was created, so that it's like, oh, we're becoming more and more dense, we need something to lock us down, and we're going to create this pyramid stuff that connects with the rest of the universe so that we stay here?
I think so.
Okay, so basically that kind of, you know, takes and a whole idea of how the pyramids were created, because...
And let's borrow this with what you said earlier about the whole civilizations humanity being kind of manipulated.
Okay.
These pyramids, all of the pyramids are in alignment. They echo placements of the stars.
Mm-hmm.
And they also echo the golden mean spiral.
Yeah.
So if that's the case, then that is also a resonance in and of itself. Number one, to be alignment with the stars, the source from which these are, in quotes, alien brethren came, which I just think are extra dimensional. And the golden mean, helping to kind of help that resonation kind of take hold, there's correlations, I think.
Ah. Sacred geometry is one of those that I've been looking into for years, and I still feel like I barely understand it.
Yeah.
But one of the things that made the most sense to me years ago was when I was looking at the John Vellum Melchizedek's Flower of Life series. He has a book out by the same name, Secrets of the Flower of Life, and I think it was Volume 1 or Volume 2 where he basically described how consciousness created everything. It made total sense to me because, you know, if you are consciousness and you are in a void, you have no concept of distance, you have no point of reference for anything else. And so basically what he described is consciousness extending itself in three dimensions, left, right, forward, backwards, and up and down. And once you extend yourself, you know, even the smallest bit, then you have a point of reference of where you are. And then from that, you basically, you know, create the, you know, the Merkaba, the tetrahedron, and from that you can create pretty much anything, because that goes along with the Flower of Life and the all that other stuff where the energy has a lens to now be focused.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, I was like, okay, if I do not understand anything else with sacred geometry, I understand this.
Exactly, yeah.
And I think that goes along with kind of what you're talking about, where if you're going to have an experiment, a human experiment, as you were talking about, then you want to have it set up a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
And we do that with life, you know, all the time. It's like, hey, we have computers. Well, we want them to work a certain way. Well, we have programmers that will tell the computers that, okay, work this way when a user does this, and work this way when they do that. When they click on the mouse, go here. You know, whatever they're clicking on, go here. And I could see, you know, consciousness being at a certain point where it says, okay, well, what do I want? And like, I want rainbows. Okay, all of a sudden, rainbows. And then, you know, this goes back to the whole kind of book of Genesis in the Bible, where you get to a point where you say, it's kind of dark in here, I'd like light. Boom, all of a sudden you have contrast of light and dark. And then that would be the 7 days or 6 days of creation from that one point.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. Now, if you take the book of Genesis and you take all these other ideas that you're talking about and the pyramids, I think, and sacred geometry, I think when we get where it gets dangerous for us is we're so physically oriented that we forget that things are analogous.
Mm.
And for example, and I have the same issue with sacred geometry you do, Donald, is that I really try to wrap my head around it and get it, and I don't think it's meant to be gotten. I think it's more so that we are the creators of our own reality, and as we create our reality, they are going to start taking these eddies, and physical reality will take form based on spiritual geometry, the patterns in which the energy flows, in which consciousness flows.
Gotcha.
So I don't think it's saying if you use spiritual geometry, you're going to attain this. I think it's more so as you create, this is the template or the structure, the archetype or the whatever you want to call it, the skeleton that matter is going to use. This is going, the form of the energy matter is going to use the sacred geometry.
Kind of like with computer programming, you know, everything is ones and zeros. That's the mechanism. That's the basics. That's like the atomic structure of reality is ones and zeros. It's either on or off.
Exactly.
And, you know, you create tools to use that kind of ones and zeros. You create programs that are based on that ones and zeros so that you can program other things easier instead of sitting there typing out 1 1 0 0 1 1 1 0 1 1 0 1 1, you know, as opposed
right.
to program like, no, it's like you get into basics like line 10, go to line 20, line 20, go to line 10.
Let me take your analogy another step. Before the computer program was comprised of ones and zeros, the concept was dreamed up in the head of the programmer.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't matter if the programmer doesn't say, I'm going to put all these ones and zeros in a pattern and see what happens. The conceptor dreamt it first. The concept, the programmer said, I want to create a program and I want it to do this. So now, in order to make this program do this, what I need to do is assemble it into reality using the ones and zeros. And I think that that is pretty much the same idea, is that for the program that was dreamed up by the concept, the programmer, is more like consciousness had this dream of what we are right now.
Mm-hmm.
And as it started dreaming it and putting it out there, then it started to flow along secret geometry, which are the ones and zeros, to take shape into our physical reality.
We are in the Matrix.
We are in the Matrix. I really think that's the case.
And then from that point, it'd be like, well, we've talked about in previous podcasts where, well, my perception and your perception, we've agreed on certain things to happen and be the same in our same reality.
Consensual reality.
Yeah, consensual. Thank you. That's what I was looking for. So it's like my matrix that I am living in, or my bubble, my reality bubble and your reality bubble, you know, they are in the bathtub of the bubble bath of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And we're like, yes, it's watery. Yes. And the water moves like this. Okay. What happens when the drain happens? Oh, that's the end of the universe. There's an end to the universe. So when was the beginning? Somebody turned on the faucet.
Hmm.
Well, that analogy starts to break down at that point.
Well, I think it's because we're using the beginning and the end is where it breaks down.
Yeah, so I think I've asked you this before. If the whole idea of a beginning and an end is so much ingrained in us, then what if there wasn't?
What if there wasn't a beginning and an end?
Yeah, then life just goes on forever into the future from our perspective here, and all the way into the back for eternity in all directions.
Well, you know, I'm going to go outside the esoteric, and I'm going to get a little bit more sociological here.
Okay.
And I've been thinking about this a lot lately for some reason. It's really been sticking with me. My belief is that if humanity embraced and really believed on a gut level that our consciousness was eternal, our consciousness, let's go even so far to say that Donald or David or anybody, the consciousness that we know and love, or, you know, for depends on the person. Some people don't love their own consciousness, but
the ones and zeros of our soul. Is that what you're talking about?
No, I'm not talking about the ones and zeros of our soul. Okay. What I'm talking about is just the I am part of our soul.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
I'm David. Here I am, David. And that David, in my belief, David will continue to exist. David may change a little bit. I mean, think about how much you've changed over the course of your life, right? But yet there's this core of recognition of who you are that's maintained even though you've changed.
Oh, yeah.
I still think that core recognition of who you are will continue, and it will just continue to continue. That's not going anywhere. You have for eternity a core recognition of who you are.
Okay.
And that won't end. And I believe we all do. We all have a core recognition of who we are, and that will go on forever. And I really do believe if we embrace that and knew that for certain, we wouldn't be dealing with all these things like war and strife and people calling each other bad names and stealing their baubles and trinkets and, you know, kicking people and this phobia and that phobia and this ism and that ism.
I disagree.
I believe that.
I disagree.
Why?
I have to disagree because I look at it as from a perspective of, you know, tabletop role-playing games like Dungeons and Dragons and stuff like that. You know, part of the fun of creating a character, like creating a David or creating a Donald or anyone else, and putting them in this three-dimensional earthbound reality, when you're playing role-playing, it's fun to be the bad guy sometimes. It's fun to get in a brawl. It's fun to steal and loot and fight a dragon and, you know, go against barbarians, because from us playing this game, playing this character, playing out this scenario, it would be really boring if we spent the whole game, you know, just going around, oh, okay, it's been 20 days and we're still in the bar drinking. Okay. And so I think consciousness, even if we believed and really, really understood that our isness goes on forever and has been forever, and in this human reality, in this human experiment, We want to have fun. We want to experience the good and the bad and the ugly and everything in between.
So what I'm understanding you say that if that's the case, then the good and the bad and the ugly, those perceptions of what's good and what's bad, they're not really any different. That there is really no true good or true bad.
Exactly. And this was part of what I was talking about in our episode on good and evil. Mm-hmm. Is what is good and what is evil is a whole idea of complete perception. And good is as well. So whatever your morality, whatever your moral makeup of your isness is, then that's your concept of what is, you know, good, evil, or good or bad.
Well, see, yeah, I think I agree with you to an extent.
Okay.
I'm still going to hold on to what I'm thinking, but I do agree with you to an extent. I think that a lot of the things that we do is response in fear of us losing it all. I do think so. It doesn't seem to me to be playful. What you're talking about with Dungeons and Dragons, let me use this example with the Dungeons and Dragons things you talk. If you made a character up, and you, even if it took you a long time to make a character and a long time to build and keep that character, you still take risks with that character that you don't take with yourself.
Exactly.
And you do that because you know that at the end of the day that the character was something you created, and you'll always have the adventure to tell from how you played that character.
Mm-hmm.
We can also use the World of Warcraft idea or any of those kind of things where you create a character and you're willing to put them at risk because you know at the end of the day they may be gone, but you'll always have them in memory or whatever. The experience stays with you eternally, and you're okay with that. There are human beings that take great risks saying, I've only got one time around, I'm just going to go for broke. But there's a lot of human beings that do things that say, you know what, I don't want this taken from me. I'm afraid of my discomforts, you know, coming face to face with my mortality. And as a result, they play it safe constantly. If you really knew that your consciousness and even your isness was inviolate, why would you play it safe?
Because you would go along the isness of who you are. I mean, when you're playing, like, we'll say role-playing game or World of Warcraft or any of those where you create a character, we'll say even The Sims, because that was popular for a while and it may still be for a little while. I'm going to go very basic, so I'm going to go with The Sims, where you create a character, you give them, you know, a certain attributes of charisma and basic ideas of stuff. We'll take the whole idea of charisma. If you give a character in The Sims high charisma, then he might have a very low or very high slob rating. So in other words, he doesn't keep himself clean, but he's able to, you know, sell ice to Eskimos. And I think that the choice to play it safe or to play it extremely risky is a matter of perception from what we can perceive as what we want to do, just like what we perceive as good and evil and good and wrong, right and wrong.
I know what you're saying. I know exactly what you're saying. And you know, I don't disagree with it too much. The reason I say I don't disagree with it, because as far as I'm concerned, the reason we've come into this intense focusing of physical perception,
mm-hmm.
is to give us that illusion. There's a deliberate genesis in us breaking ourselves away from being connected with all that is, so that we would have the contrasts, have the good and evil, and have the what's the word that is the term de jure in the spiritual communities now. We're here to experience duality and all this other stuff, and you accept the duality of it and all that. Da, 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 da. But that's what we're here for. And I think there's two sides to this. There's one side that is play the game and just know that you're in the game, know that you're the berserker created, and know that you're, like you said, that your isness is embraced in this level of fear or this level of want or this level of greed or this level of joy or whatever. But on the other hand, I think the best balance is every now and then step outside and say, oh, I'm playing a game. I'm playing a role. And then go back into the role. But I think sometimes we do a little bit, and it almost is a little bit too crazy making to say, well, part of our role is to forget that we're playing a role. But okay, that's all well and good, but imagine how much more you could do if you remembered it was a role. Imagine how much more you could do how much further you could spread yourself out if you said, I am limitless because I'm creating my own reality. And then you just went for broke. Not only you'd start creating things left and right just because you knew you could.
Oh, yeah. 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 It's kind of like our soul has created this character of, you know, Donald and David and everybody else. And even though the soul has its idea of what it wants to experience with each character, with each us, through our isness, and has given us different skills and abilities and different levels so that we can experience life in different ways through different lenses. And in its analogy, the soul is the creator and we are the, you know, the characters that have been created, then we would realize that, hey, you know, we are the characters, and, you know, it doesn't matter what we do. You know, if we whenever we belly up, which, you know, we will, there is an end. Nobody gets out alive.
Right.
You know, when you're dead, all bets are off.
Right.
So, you know, then it'd be like, oh, it's just reboot the consciousness and have another go at this game.
Right.
Which but could think be about reincarnation.
Well, and I think that is reincarnation. I think it's us saying, all right, let's try it from a different angle. But what I'm saying is a lot of people say, this circumstance has befallen me. I'm the victim of this. My life is not the way I want it to be. Well, that's the problem, is your life is the way you want it to be because you're designing this life not the way you want it to be. You're deliberately putting yourself in a space that has you thinking it's not the way you want it to be so you can experience all these things that come with a life that's not the way you want it to be. Because that's what your isness is doing on this round.
Give you something to motivate you to try something different.
Right. If you had this perception of being eternal, then you could embrace the fact that your life is of your creation, and you would stop doing the, well, my life isn't what I want it to be. And instead you'd say, well, I'm creating this thing. Let me figure out what I'm creating it for, and I can kind of move past this and make it even more vibrant and more rich, the experience.
Exactly. And the more that you get in touch with, you know, your higher self, your spirit, your soul, the more that you realize where you are right now is absolutely perfect and absolutely beautiful. No matter what it is, what society says, oh, you're homeless, that's so sad. Well, maybe not to the homeless person. Or, you know, maybe you're a billionaire and like, oh, I bet you have all kinds of trouble, you know, more money, more problems. But it's a total perception of each individual onto the other, where the individual may say, hey, you know what? I have somewhere to be and I'm experiencing this, and this experience is kind of enjoyable. It's like when I was going back and forth across the country driving for about a year and a half. I went back and forth across the country 3 times. And the first time it was, this is kind of a different experience. I've done road trips before, but, you know, that was the past and this is now. And then the second time was, oh, I remember this road because I took the same route. And then the third time was like, yeah, I remember this. But at the same time, there were different things that happened. And I think when we actually get to a point where we're able to glimpse that understanding from our soul of us expressing, you know, our isness into this three-dimensional reality through our spirituality and everything else, then we do actually find an enormous amount of peace and an enormous amount of, you know, just, ah, that's kind of cool.
Right, exactly. And then you start over and create it again.
Exactly. And I think we're going to have to cut this off right there. We weren't sure exactly where this episode was going to go, and then we started talking and found out, oh, you were meaning that and I was meaning this. So yeah. I think it turned out all right.
It tied together actually really nicely in the end.
Definitely. David and I would like to thank all of our listeners. And if this is your first episode, hopefully it was entertaining. If you're a longtime listener, we thank you for taking a part in this little project that David and I have started a little while back.
And here's where you can get more information about us. You can go to taketheredpillpodcast.com, and we've got all our show notes for these episodes on there. You can also visit us on Facebook. Just type in Tape the Red Pill. the red Phil. It's Phil when he's blushing.
Phil,
take him. Take the red pill on Facebook. Like us there, and we've got all sorts of little things that we have there. And also, you can subscribe to us on iTunes and get these episodes automagically.
Yay! So for Take the Red Pill, I am Donald Dalton, wishing you to play the character of your soul.
And I'm David Deere. Just be it.